I'm a talkative person because I'm an SE dom. It's like my only world is the physical. My words are the only means of me getting out my meaning and intention. We'll see if I eat those words.
She'll be entertaining others all the time.
It's exactly where I wanted to go with it.
I would not dare to fist bump on a podcast where people can hear me.
You guys ready to go?
Yeah, keen.
What is up, everybody? Thank you so much for tuning in today to a brand new episode of the Literally No Subtext podcast with myself, Dear Kristen. Today is a Dear Kristen episode, which means it's an episode devoted to me answering your questions that you have submitted to me on my website. If you'd like to submit your own question, you can do so at www.hellodearkristen.com/contact, and I will hopefully get around to your question eventually. I do have a lot of questions in there. But the more questions, the more episodes I can do. So I certainly do encourage you to submit whatever your heart desires there. Well, not whatever your heart desires, that would be silly if I didn't put in some boundaries there. Anything related to typology and relationships, if you'd like to tell a story, share a revelation, ask a question, share an anecdote, whatever it is, go ahead and I'll read it out on the podcast and share my thoughts. So today we're actually going for the first time by category. There are a few questions that I have had that have to do with the specific topic of trauma and MBTI, and I kind of wanted to devote a whole episode to it so that there wasn't going to be the whiplash of us talking about lighthearted stuff and then suddenly getting to trauma. I also think there could be a lot to discuss here. We have some interesting questions, so I figured I'd do a trauma-devoted episode. We know that our generation is just obsessed with unpacking trauma. Yes, I am doing steeple fingers right now. And so I look forward to discussing this topic with you because it's something that I find fascinating, and it is something that has been very relevant to my life as well. So I'm going to be using the questions that you guys submitted as a springing board from which to jump into some potentially critical analyzing or correcting some of the attitudes towards type, as well as some speculation about links between MBTI and trauma, and as well as some personal sharing from my end, probably closer towards the end of this episode. So first of all, I'll give a trigger warning. There are going to be mentions of trauma, suicide, and depression in this episode. We don't really dwell on the latter two. They're just mentioned in the questions, but still, if you'd rather not listen, feel free to skip this episode. No hard feelings. Another disclaimer I'm going to make is that I'm not a therapist or mental health professional. We are just, as I said, speculating and discussing in this episode, not saying anything official. I'm just a gal with an interest in psychology and mental health, and I have a history of long therapy myself. I'm actually back in therapy at the moment, dealing with some of the things that have come up in pregnancy. So that's been fun. Yay for therapy when needed. So we'll dive straight into the first question, and I'm going to be talking extensively about multiple elements of this question after I read it. So pay attention. This question is from Cindy. Thank you, Cindy, for submitting your question. It's a long one. I would really love it and appreciate if you could discuss how trauma affects personality types and how trauma affects personality test results. For years, I thought I was an INFJ. In 2010, my employer gave all of us employees the MBTI personality test. I thought being an INFJ was cool, but I didn't really get it. I saw some similarities, but there were more glaring differences. Flash forward to 2017, I started therapy for diagnosed PTSD that resulted from sustained childhood trauma, 10 years of trauma. My therapist firmly believed that understanding your personality type and cognitive functions helps with understanding oneself and with treatment. When I told her I was an INFJ, she disagreed completely. She said she understood how my personality might appear as an INFJ because the self-defense mechanisms I display appear very much like an INFJ personality, but pulling back the layers of the trauma and removing it, I am not an INFJ. Put me in a setting with my peers and people I trust, I am not an INFJ. She suggested I retake the test and think about the questions in this manner. Don't think about how you would react, think about how you would act if you had no fear. Brackets. Fear is always core for a trauma survivor. Close brackets. I hope that makes sense. She basically told me to set aside my defense mechanisms. I retook the test, actual MBTI test administered by MBTI, taking her advice and viewing the questions from the differing perspective, and my test result was an ENFP personality. My therapist completely agreed, and she was right. Understanding my personality was instrumental in my treatment. Understanding other people's personalities also was very important. When I got my test results, I looked at the ENFP. I completely understood and recognized the personality type as mine, brackets, I had only ever really looked at INFJs, close brackets. I clicked with it. Today, after all the therapy and a successful recovery, as much as possible with complex PTSD, I truly believe having an ENFP personality was part of what gave me the will to live several times in the past. The suicide rate for the type of childhood abuse I experienced is extremely high, and I remember several times thinking about that option. But being me, an ENFP, I always see the love and goodness. It always breaks through. I always see the beauty in life, in people, in the world. I even see the beauty in what happened to me, for I wouldn't be who I am today. If I had known in 2010 that I was an ENFP instead of 7 years later, it might have made a world of difference. I would have realized, I'm not crazy, this is literally my personality, and it's really beautiful to see beauty everywhere. Anyway, I have never seen anyone have a deep discussion on how trauma can affect personality results or how understanding your personality type can help one recover from trauma. It would be really great if you could talk about some of these items. If you do, feel free to use anything here. Also, feel free if you want more details about anything, I'll write or talk your ear off. Oh, by the way, huge congratulations on your marriage. You haven't posted in a while, so I am hoping you enjoy your honeymoon and that everything is okay with you. From Cindy. Thank you so much, Cindy, for that submission. Thank you for being so vulnerable and honest. First of all, I'm so sorry to hear about your PTSD and what you went through as a child and for the terrible thoughts that you had and the hardships that you had to go through. That is truly horrible and something really challenging to work through. So I'm glad that you're at a point where you seem to understand it a little bit more and have made steps to facilitate your own healing. That's something to be congratulated. And you seem like a very strong person. And it's really raw and vulnerable of you to share that with us. So thank you so much for sharing that and for giving me permission to talk about it on this podcast channel. Next, I want to say that, yeah, maybe a lot of people do not talk about trauma and MBTI and how they are linked. And I think that that's potentially a good thing that we don't talk about trauma and MBTI in any kind of definitive way. Trauma is super complex and we are not therapists. There is not nearly enough research into MBTI and trauma and how trauma affects MBTI type and those kinds of things. But we're going to go ahead and talk a bit more about it, unpack it and speculate about it in this episode. So I'm going to go into critical thinking / analyzing mode now. And this is 100% not to make value statements about the person who submitted the question, their personality type, their understanding of type, or anything personal to them as a person. I just want to open up the topic to trauma, although I am going to go into the ins and outs of the question in a second. I'm also going to take the fact that Cindy gave me permission to use whatever I wanted from the question to open up a discussion. So thank you again for that. General disclaimer though, we're discussing ideas here, not making judgments. Let's place a bet on how many times I'm going to make a disclaimer of that nature in this episode. Everyone make your private bets. So although it's fun to speculate and talk about, I think that using type to suggest healing methods for trauma isn't the best way to go, in my opinion, because MBTI isn't prescriptive, as I've said before. It doesn't have high predictability and reliability, which is why it's not used officially by therapists. Well, one of the reasons. What I mean is you cannot say for certain that X healing method will work for every ESTP out there or Y method will work for every ENFJ out there. I think the best way to use it is as just one tool to understand yourself and your thought processes. Trauma is something different and is insanely complex, and it happens within the brain, body, and the nervous system, which are things that we all have. Not only that, but while trauma does sometimes, I guess, alter how someone's personality presents, the ways in which a personality is altered because of trauma can be applied across the board. So classic trauma symptoms like the inability to regulate emotions, being frequently triggered, having prolonged stress responses, compromised ability to relate to yourself and others, your perception of self and others, being easily frightened, self-destructive behavior, trouble sleeping, trouble concentrating, etc., etc. These symptoms apply across the board to all people that have been affected by trauma, so we do not have the ability to say that trauma affects these specific types in these different ways. And in a similar way, healing rates vary across people suffering with trauma, and people are so different in how trauma affects them that we can't even say for certain that XYZ healing methods work with 100% accuracy, even without MBTI in the picture. So in my opinion, we can't really draw conclusions about how type helps with healing from and understanding trauma. Again, we can speculate and make predictions, but I think it's important to do so in a non-definitive manner. So there are a few things that came up in this question that I feel inclined to address here. And again, to this person who submitted the question, I hope you don't mind me using your question to point out a few things that I noticed. Namely, potentially, I guess, hazardous ways of looking at things when it comes to type that are at risk of distorting a healthy use of type. And I think some of these attitudes can be seen in the type community at large. So I think it's something that everyone's guilty of slash can steer towards when they first get into type or like first become obsessed with type. So the first thing I'm going to go into about the specifics of this question is that you said in one of your sentences, but pulling back the layers of trauma and removing it, I am not an INFJ. Put me in a setting with my peers and people I trust, I am not an INFJ. And I'll say that what I'm about to say based on this sentence, I'm not an INFJ with my friends. My apologies if I'm missing context, but for now, I'm going to run with the interpretation of, with my own interpretation of what you've said. So the first thing that I thought when I read this was that I think it's really important to keep in mind that type is not behavior. Don't get me wrong, it translates to behavior. That's one element of it, but it isn't in its essence behavior. It's the mental steps that bring you to behavior. So if you're different with your close friends, which I assume means you're more confident or more talkative or more trusting with your close friends, this isn't necessarily the mode by which to judge your type. Everyone's different with their close friends. Comfort levels are up, walls are down, etc., etc. In fact, an INFJ could very well present as an ENFP some days with their friends. That's something that a lot of INFJs could have experienced. So if you only use that example to prove that you're not an INFJ, not saying that you're doing that in your life, but the wording of this question implied that you might be, it's not going to be good enough because type and cognitive functions are the 24/7 lens through which you are viewing the world. That is, it's the mode in which you're existing most of the time. So we're therefore doing ourselves a disservice if we try to type ourselves based on our behavior in an isolated or particular circumstance. And again, I'm not saying that Cindy is necessarily wrong about her type. I'm just pointing out a common misconception that I think people have when it comes to type and behavior. Now, maybe you realized over several periods of hanging out with your friends that you behave in a way that indicates that you use an NEFI cognitive function preference. But again, if those really are your preferences, I feel like you'd notice them at other points in your life, not just with your, when you're with your friends. That said, I do understand that trauma can make you put up certain defense mechanisms, those which in your own words make you feel like you're an INFJ. But defense mechanisms can be just external behaviors, which again aren't type. And even those internal defense mechanisms are pretty universal. And so we don't have nearly enough research linking type to PTSD or defense mechanisms to say for sure where defense mechanisms differ between types. We can speculate, but the answers aren't going to be reliable, as I said before, which is why therapists don't use MBTI officially. Also, to imply that you appear as an INFJ all of the time except when you're with your friends, where you become a different type, would imply that outside of being with your friends, trauma has somehow has the ability to shut off all the tendencies of your actual type and present as a completely different type, even to the point of changing your cognitive functions. And again, we just don't have that kind of data. Who's to say? Maybe trauma can get in the way of your ability to recognize your own cognitive functions, which is why you might think you're a different type. But missing that context, it's still not enough to judge your type definitively based just on behavior, such as perceived defense mechanisms and how you are with your friends. There's the possibility that maybe your friends were the ones that pointed out to you that you seem to not be an INFJ when you're with them. You seem to be an ENFP rather. But then that still means that even if they're right, you'd still be an ENFP when you're not with them and you'd still present as such in your cognitive functions. I don't know if it seems like I'm reading too much into this, but I think the wording implies that you changed into a different type just when you're with your friends, which, although your behavior might change, doesn't necessarily mean that your type is changing. So saying as you did that, quote, pulling back the layers of the trauma and removing it, I am not an INFJ, end quote, implies that trauma has the ability to completely change your type, which is something that we just have no evidence to support. I mean, maybe it does, who knows, but we just don't have the evidence for it. I hope that makes sense. Also, I feel like we have to be careful not to link being an INFJ with trauma symptoms. But that's just one element of your question, which I think I've probably misunderstood, maybe. And I know you can't elaborate on everything in your question, but I considered an opportunity to bring up a common misunderstanding within the community that type equals behavior, etc. And I really hope I haven't just added to the confusion here. But hey, Cindy, if you're listening, I'd love a more in-depth description of how you reach these conclusions. Because the worst is when you're listening to someone talk about your situation and you're like, no, that's not what I meant. No, you're missing this nuance. And I'm sorry that that's the case. But again, just thought I'd use it as an opportunity to bring up these points. The next thing I want to address within this particular question, sorry, Cindy, but your question was so long and nuanced and just ripe with vulnerability that I just have to pick it apart. No, just kidding. But please know that I am speaking in good faith here and out of an interest for providing food for thought and challenging listeners to consider how they see MBTI as a tool for learning and growth about the self. And how many disclaimers is that, guys? Okay, so the next thing you mentioned is that your therapist advised you to take the test another time, but this time answering the questions not as how you would react, but how you would act if you had no fear, saying fear is always core for a trauma survivor. And then you went on to say how you took the test from a different perspective and got an ENFP result. I'm just going to take this and use it as a jumping point to talk about another potential issue with these online tests. Not saying this will happen to you. And again, you mentioned you did take an official MBTI test, not the one that you just find on 16personalities.com. But I still think that the confirmation bias can be quite real with MBTI tests in general. A lot of people go into the online tests subconsciously projecting a version of who they want to be onto their answers. And the questions for a lot of these tests aren't nuanced enough to account for the changes in mood, perspective, and life circumstances that happen day in and day out for each one of us. And I think this is a huge reason why people get fluctuating or incorrect results and why the test can be unreliable as a whole. So whilst you may in fact be an ENFP, that advice being to take the test through the lens of how you would act if you had no fear isn't necessarily always going to be the best to give because of the aforementioned reasons, but also a lot of the time, we don't even know how we would act if we had no fear or how we would act if our defense mechanisms are down. Heck, so many defense mechanisms are automatic that we aren't even aware of them at all. So if we imagine ourselves without fear or defense mechanisms, we could just be projecting again an ideal version of ourselves rather than who we actually are. I'm definitely not downplaying how confusing I'm sure it is to take the MBTI test for some people who are affected by trauma. I know that that can have a huge effect on perception of self, but I'm just saying that it's not always the best to take the test if you're trying to answer for our ideal or best version of self. Unless you're just doing it for fun, in which case, all power to you. So that brings us to the next thing that I really want to address in this question, which I think is super important. And that is that the person who submitted this question used language that implied that it was their ENFP diagnosis, so to speak, and their personality type that enabled them to get through the hardships. So I'll just give some quotes here from the question. I truly believe that having an ENFP personality was what gave me the will to live in the past. Being an ENFP, I always see the love and goodness. I always see the beauty in life, in people, in the world. I even see the beauty in what happened to me. If I had known in 2010 that I was an ENFP instead of 7 years later, it might have made a world of difference. Whilst I appreciate your positivity, I seriously do, and I think it's really beautiful that you see things this way, make no mistake, Cindy, it was not your ENFP personality that got you here. It was you. It was your resilience and strength, your capacity for love, your decisions to do the hard work. No type is more likely to do any of these things than any other type. And when we start to talk like this, that's when we can really start to limit people or box them in with our understanding of type, which is not what type is for. And I know that we as humans search for a lens through which we can understand the horrible things that have happened to us. That's very human and very fair. But give yourself some of the credit, my friend. It wasn't your type, it was you. So to imply that one type has an advantage in such things denies the universality of the gifts of virtue, of goodness, of love. The ability to love and be good and be virtuous is accessible to everyone, regardless of type. Yeah, type might affect the mental steps we take to process things, but virtue is available to all. Healing is available to all. Strength and resilience are available to all. Just as we can all be bogged down and suffocated by trauma, we can all do the hard work to heal from it, and no type is more capable of that than the next. What differentiates how successful different people are in healing from trauma has very little to do with personality and type. It probably has to do with the extent of the trauma, when it happened, how long it happened. The Body Keeps the Score, which is one of my favorite books, goes into, and I'm going to just butcher it in this summary, but the author talks about how most of the PTSD cases that he's seen have healed over time, but there's one type of client that has never healed, and that is anyone who is a Vietnam vet. So there is something so traumatic about that episode that made it particularly hard for these veterans to heal from the trauma, and we can't necessarily know why or account for that. But we certainly can probably say that not every Vietnam vet was of the same type. They're probably of multiple different types. But it was the extent of the trauma and the situations that they went through in that particular circumstance that made it long-lasting. Unfortunately, trauma is something that can happen to all of us. But the ability to heal is something that is within the grasp of all of us. And I think that that is super important to talk about. Also, it's completely reasonable to assume that you were less strong 7 years ago or more overtly affected by the trauma 7 years ago, and that it took a long and painful journey to get to where you are today. So please don't undersell your effort by thinking, if only I'd known I was an ENFP personality type 7 years ago. INFJs are also completely capable of seeing the world through the happy, joyous lenses that you talked about, and ENFPs are, in the same way, not above being bogged down by trauma when it first happens to them. So, all power to you, Cindy. Well done. Be proud of yourself. You rule. And I 100% commend you on the efforts and the work that you've done to overcome the horrific things that you've been through. I'm so sorry. It's hard. It's hard to work through this stuff. So please know that the strength lies within you, not in your type, and it's accessible always. So glad we were able to talk about that. So this question also serves as an example of how MBTI diagnoses, so to speak, can harm you when you don't understand them properly. Not saying, again, that Cindy didn't understand them properly. I don't think there was enough information in the question for me to make such judgments. But we really have to accept in the type community and in society that all personalities are equal in their ability to obtain virtue, and similarly, in their ability to descend into evil. So Cindy's INFJ diagnosis, for some reason, had made her feel like she was held back in her potential for many years. And we've already discussed that there are a multitude of factors that can make one feel held back. So some people place way too much emphasis on their MBTI type. Your type cannot hold you back if you're using the tool correctly. Think about the person you want to be. Think about that ideal, an ideal in career or an ideal in virtue, whatever it may be. And now hear me. You can obtain that ideal no matter what your type is. You can obtain that goal no matter what your type is. You don't need a magical type diagnosis to activate your potential. The gift of goodness is available to us all. I think sometimes we can become so obsessed with knowing our type that it actually gets in our way. I think understanding type is good in order to understand the self and others. But fundamentally, we have to get to know ourselves, who we actually are, our passions, our natural charisms and gifts. And if MBTI is hindering that, then it might be better to just ditch the tool altogether. There, I said it. That said, I want to say that I know trauma can have insane effects on our ability to know and process ourselves and on our personality in general, but it seems to me in this question that there could be a risk of placing too much emphasis on realizing you were an ENFP as the cure, so to speak, for your trauma, when again, it was probably your own internal work with the help from your therapist, as well as time and some other factors. So in summary, because I've talked about this now for what, half an hour? To answer the key questions in this question, number one, can trauma affect personality results? I think certainly yes, it can. I can't say how exactly, but trauma can make profound alterations to the brain that make us shut down, switch off, change personality traits at random times. So I think that that, along with other factors such as mood, confirmation bias, etc., as I spoke about, can totally affect personality test results, which is, again, one of the reasons why a lot of the tests aren't the best way of working out your type, in my opinion. We can get triggered by certain questions. We can misunderstand different questions based on our trauma. And so there are just so many unknown factors that might affect a test that already has such low accuracy. And I'm talking about the online tests and questionnaires in particular, not typing sessions. Although it's likely that similar trauma-influenced factors might affect those as well. It's hard to say. Second part of that question was treatment. So I think in terms of treatment for trauma based on MBTI type, I don't think we can draw definitive conclusions, as I spoke about before. I'm also not a therapist, keep that in mind. I think most popular treatments for PTSD would be good across the board for any type. So I can speak from my personal experience. In 2020, I had a heavy PTSD response to years of built up and unprocessed trauma. And I was petrified by this, so I got into therapy immediately. And I took the healing strategies really seriously because, again, I was so scared by this sudden response. So the techniques that worked for me in moving past my main trauma were mostly talk therapy, did a lot of that, still doing a lot of that, cognitive behavioral therapy, and time. I also did a lot of prayer and journaling to get to know myself and my triggers more. That was really helpful. I really think a spiritual aspect is important in handing over the trauma to a higher power, so to speak, so God. That really worked for me. I also began the painful process of opening up to friends and relatives about my trauma, which helped me to heal. That was really hard. Everyone who has been through traumatic instances know how hard it is to open up, especially the first few times you do it. Now, I'm not qualified, and perhaps no one is, to comment on whether those particular treatments were type influenced as an ESFP, but I think I would confidently say that these techniques would help most people. In regards to the depression that came from the PTSD, and that's a common symptom of PTSD, the techniques that I mainly used for that, as I didn't want to go on antidepressants, it hadn't come to that for me, were a lot of the aforementioned techniques, but also a very strict routine, a balanced lifestyle, and a diet. Though it's important to note that my depression was situational in both of the cases in which I had it, not clinical and therefore not long-term. So that's just a little bit of history from my end about my experience with that and some of my thoughts about treatment and speculating about how trauma affects type. I encourage you guys to leave your thoughts to this topic in the comments of the YouTube video of this episode, which you can find in the show notes, although it's called just literally no subtext on YouTube, so you can just search it. Also, feel free to send me a contact submission, also in the links of the show notes, if you have some opinions you want to share. Before we move on, I just want to say another thanks to Cindy for this question and for being so raw and for giving me permission to talk about it. Thank you, Cindy. Your story is valued. So we're going to jump on to another question. This one is from Jackie. When I was a younger woman, I took the MBTI test and self-typed as an ENFP, but then I started dealing with some of my childhood stuff. It took a long time. During that time, I typed as an INFP and took a certain pride in it. However, I've been told by others that there is no way I'm shy or an introvert. I'm just now healing from all that I went through, and I'm very grateful to the Lord for that. In the past couple of days, I've been thinking that maybe I am more extroverted than I had previously thought. I don't think I changed types, but when one heals from trauma, does their type become more authentic? Also, can one be a softly spoken ENFP? Thank you and God bless. Jackie. First of all, yes, I think you can absolutely be a softly spoken ENFP, and you can also be a very talkative INFP. Nurture has a lot to do with this, I think. I do think ENFPs and INFPs are going to eventually show their hand based on whether they're ultimately external or internal processes, but as we just discussed, behavior is not a sure enough factor to determine type. But if you're running with an extroverted function, you're going to be extroverting first. And if you're running with an introverted function, you're going to be introverting first in terms of processing. So that's a key place to look. In regards to whether or not your type becomes more authentic after healing from trauma, for the reasons I just talked about, I can't say for sure. I will speculate though, because I do love a good speculation based on my own experience and that which I've seen in others. I guess it depends on what you call authentic. So we'll have another story time based on my personal experience. Before I had started to process my trauma, I was, without even knowing it, distracting myself in a whole bunch of ways in order to avoid going within into my internal world. Every time I went within, it was a whole confusing mess of stuff that was just too painful to open, or my subconscious coping mechanisms were just flat out forbidding me from going too deep. And I wasn't aware of any of this at the time. So what I actually found was that my extroverted functions were far more obvious because my internal world was blocked off to an extent. There were a handful of years where I feel like I was existing in pure S-E-N-T-E. The FI was there, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't being used to find my most authentic, peaceful center. It was being used to simply dictate at lightning speed what my emotions were telling me to do. So I felt like doing something, so I did it. There was no meditating on it, no predicting what might happen in the future, no discernment about doing it, just constant action. Now, some people might have seen me and thought that I looked like a more classic or typical ESFP at this time. I was partying, drinking, talking constantly. I was very friendly, very social, doing whatever I felt like doing, spending money where I felt like spending it. I rarely talked or thought about my future. I didn't want to get into deep conversations, etc., etc. And I mean, if you had asked me at the time, I probably would have said I'm being my most authentic self. I didn't know that there were coping mechanisms holding me back from going deep into a world that was going to be really painful to open one day. But did the fact that my SE and TE were so obvious and that I was a very clear ESFP mean that I was being the most authentic version of my type? I think it'd be pretty hard to argue that, given that both of my introverted functions, FI and NI, were being completely stifled. Now, after healing, well, I mean, we're on a life journey of healing, really. Nothing's ever 100% healed, but now after doing the majority of that main healing for that particular instance in my life, I would say that the communication between my functions is far more cohesive. I feel like a person with more integrity, as in the person who I feel like I am deep down is the person I say I am to others. It's all in cohesion. I'm still an ESFP though, but there is just more synergy between my functions. So I do actually think that as healing, humility, and maturity comes out of life, the functions round out, they settle, and I think they leave more space for each other. None of them are in overdrive and none of them are being neglected. Now, to clarify, I don't think that this is something you can predict before it happens in terms of how it's going to manifest when your functions come into a more mature state, as we addressed in the first question. But I do think it does come to pass that our functions mature and interact more as buddies rather than competitors as we mature as humans, which involves healing from past pains. And that's just part of life. And it's a beautiful thing, somewhat. So thank you so much, Jackie, for that question. I hope my answer was sufficient. The next and final question, and I've talked for way longer than I thought I would, is from Tully. I've developed a workplace comedy TV show, and I'm using MBTI to shape my lovable misfits. I'm finding it very hard to type the villains. The characters are all being loosely based on real people I haven't met. I got a brief description from my co-creator whose workplace the concept is based on. And to be fair, for the good guys, I got info such as why they're competent or not and what their basic strategy is. And for the bad guys, I got here's why they're a bad word. But still, it does seem to be harder to type someone when they're not particularly mentally well. For example, one guy is a pathological liar. Any type could become that, given enough trauma, no? How do I work backwards from what their broken selves look like to find out what their functioning selves would be? Thanks a million. Off to watch your videos as research. From an INTJ. Thank you so much, Tully, for your question. Very fascinating. Gosh, writing characters based on type. That's a hard one. I literally do that every week. I'm intrigued. Are you going to bring your evil characters out of their evil arcs into goodness? or is this just a character exploration exercise? Regardless, I can only speak from the perspective of someone who is not writing a book and who only writes characters for very short, sometimes shallow or unnuanced, but equally funny and charming skits. I agree that when someone is not mentally well, it can be harder to type someone. I've thought about this a lot. I've thought many times about how people with personality disorders as well can be harder to type. I genuinely find this stuff so fascinating, but I don't have concrete answers. Just speculations. I think, as I said in the first question, trauma certainly has effects and symptoms that do not discriminate based on type. So INTJs to INFJs to ESTPs alike are all at risk of experiencing the same symptoms when it comes to trauma. And one of the things that can tend to happen when someone suffers intense trauma is that their personality is subdued, so to speak. Demons take over, the intrusive thoughts win, to quote C.S. Lewis, and this is a quote I know off by heart because I've said it so many times. How monotonously alike all the great tyrants and conquerors have been. How gloriously different are the saints. I think when vice comes in, that's not to say that all trauma symptoms are vices, but in this case, Tully specifically talked about villains and pathological liars. When vice comes into the picture, I think the beautifully different colors of someone's personality can fade to grayscale. I think if we let vice creep into our personality, none of us are above falling into behaviors such as lying, being bitter, being unhappy, seeking power, getting joy from others' misery. So when you look at someone who's a truly vicious person, how do you work out what they looked like before they turned sour? It is a challenging question. Perhaps instead of working backwards, you could start from the beginning. Maybe decide who the character was and then join the dots to figure out what particular decisions or trauma led to them turning. That story could be very interesting. Maybe their interests as a villain stem from wounds that developed as a child, or an area in which they lacked love or lacked self-confidence as a child. I admire you for asking these questions, Tully, and I think that they are questions worth asking and necessary when trying to establish the intricately woven world of a novel. Another thing you could ask yourself, as I just spoke about in reference to myself in the previous question, is what function in their villainhood is the blaringly obvious one? If I were a villain, for instance, my SE would be running wild. I'd be thrill-seeking. I'd be impulsive as heck. And although my vices might be the same as the villain next door, as an SE dom, I certainly wouldn't be a subtle villain. That you can be sure of. I'd also probably likely be charismatic, which I would almost definitely use to manipulate people. This is a fun exercise. What would I look like as a villain? I'm actually not going to go too far on that tangent because I could depress myself. Lest I realise that the villain Kristen bears similarities to the Kristen I am today. So look, I think there's a lot that you could do. You could ask yourself what would their dominant function look like in pure overdrive, as well as what natural strengths their dominant functions lend themselves to, and how those strengths could be corrupted for evil means. Perhaps you could do a storyboard of what your villain would look like as each of the 16 types, and then pick the one that resonates the most with you in your story. And from there, work out the functions present and how the corruption happened, and so on and so on. Very interesting question. I feel like I've been gifted the gift of interesting questions today, and I feel it's almost unfair that I'm the only one answering them. So again, I just want to encourage you guys, please do visit the YouTube channel and leave your thoughts in the comments. Because I don't know if I've ever discussed something so serious as an entire episode devoted to trauma. I certainly haven't. I mean, I've discussed serious stuff on the main channel in my 5-day episodes. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I just feel like it's been a while since we've gone this deep. And so it's like quite vulnerable and I feel imposter syndrome when I do it. So I would certainly love to know your thoughts, guys. Yeah. For now, that's all the questions that we have time for because I've been recording for just over 50 minutes. And I think that's long enough for a podcast episode. So I hope that there was some food for thought here. I want to say thank you again to the three people who submitted, Cindy, Jackie, and Tully. Thank you for your questions. I appreciate these questions that allow me to think deeply and talk about things that are important to me. Trauma has been a part of my journey, and I really just love encouraging others to, you know, work towards healing, work towards therapy, whatever it is. That's why I enjoy talking about this stuff. And so it's been a blessing and a gift to be here with you today, and I hope that you got something out of this episode. Next time, we will probably move on to some lighter questions to do with type specifically, but maybe I'll do some more themed questions. In fact, yeah, it might be a good idea to, I guess, maybe ask for questions to do with a certain theme on my Instagram page and then have an episode devoted to that theme. Could be fun. But for now, that's it. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. If you would like to follow me on my socials, there's of course my main YouTube channel called Dear Kristin, K-R-I-S-T-I-N, which has my comedy skits and my Fridays episodes. Has been a while since I uploaded those, but they are, I think, pretty all right quality. So if you like this kind of content that we talked about today, definitely go check those out. Otherwise, check out the Instagram page, also called dear.kristin. A reminder that you can go to hellodearkristin.com/contact if you would like to submit a question for these episodes. I hope I do get to do more of these podcasts, and it stands to reason that I will, because I'm pregnant and I filmed a skit today. And let me tell you, filming skits these days is so much energy because I'm so fatigued all the time and in so much pain. I have to like sit down for 30 minutes in between like each four types that I film. So I would really love to do more episodes sitting down on this chair with a microphone or with a camera and just talking. But that might be a hard transition to make given that my channel is known and people subscribe for the skits. So if you have any creative ideas about that, feel free to hit me up as well. Preparing for my maternity leave at the moment, so I do need to film extra content for those 3 months. I'm hoping I can rack up some content for the 3 months. Anyway, I'm rambling. Thank you so much for listening. Follow my socials if you want to hang out with me more. And until next time, guys, have a beautiful, beautiful day. Bye.